There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1057, August 19th, 2024, Nasser.
Porsche pulls the plug on their F1 fantasy. Nico plugs into Michael Andretti's Formula E team. And we do a Janus on the 2024 season. We shall explain gladly.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, is Flavio Briatore deciding when Fernando will retire? Kyle Larson versus Max Verstappen has the internet on fire. Will they possibly race in the race of champions at the end of the year? Will the Orange Army settle for papaya orange at Zandvoort? In this week's interviews, ladies and gentlemen, we've got Nicola Larini and Alex Kalinakis. And let's not forget, ladies and gentlemen, that yes, we do need those contributions that keep this program out there on the cloud. So please, don't hesitate. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you want to. And Nasser will be bringing us a season in review. Of course, this year's 2024 Formula One season, Nas is going to give us all the details.
Oh dear, the long wait is almost over. We have a Grand Prix motor race this weekend. We have only seen one driver winning all the races at Zandvoort since it came back on the schedule in 2021. Who could that be? Alas, through all the slings and arrows, it is not Machismo. It is homegrown terror on the track, Maximo. But even the mighty Maximo has reached his Waterloo. But the damage he has done in the early part of the season, winning 5 of the first 7 races, will lead to winning the war despite losing a few battles here and there in the second half of the 2024 campaign. But wait, there's more. He may not have an effective wingman, but he does have Lewis Hamilton's ex-girlfriend, Lady Luck. You may ask yourself, where is my beautiful fourth championship and how did I get here? For that, we open the Janus Journal. As we look back on the season so far and what to expect from the second half. The start of the season in Bahrain was no surprise. Max on pole, Max on top step of the podium with fastest lap. His teammate Sergio Perez was second, but over 22 seconds behind. The Red Bull team also finished 1-2 in 2023. Needless to say, in the same order. Ferrari drivers took third and fourth in Bahrain this year, Carlito ahead of Charles. Let's hear what the race winner had to say.
To be honest, I don't really look at if it looks very different or whatever. As long as it's fast, like, I don't care if it looks exactly the same, but you gain half a second, or if it looks completely different and you gain half a second to a second, or, you know, for me that doesn't matter. What I do like is that they haven't been conservative and afraid to just stick to what we had and just try to continue from there. I think the whole design team has been really on it. Or even things that you can't see from the outside.
Rinse and repeat in round 2 in the sands of Saudi Arabia. But this time Checo was only 13 seconds behind his teammate. this was Red Bull's third successive win in Saudi Arabia. Last year it was Perez, and Max won in 2022. Leclerc was third and set the fastest lap of the race. His teammate Carlito was MIA. He was having an appendicitis surgery. His place was taken over by young English driver Oliver Bearman, who did a very impressive job in his debut on a very fast street circuit driving for Scuderia Ferrari. That is pressure upon pressure, and brought the second prancing horse to the finish line in 7th. Kudos to the Cambridge kid, and let's hear his feelings on his Formula One debut.
Destroyed. Physically, it was a really difficult race, especially at the end when I had the two guys on soft behind me, and I had to basically push flat out, and it was mentally difficult race as expected, and physically I was struggling too. But great fun out there.
Mr. Rogers, were you impressed by Ollie Bearman's debut?
Yes. Oliver Bearman, Ollie. You know, I thought he did fantastic. It was a great performance. But I am now jaded by your favorite, Nyck de Vries. And so you can have a great moment and still completely fail in Formula One. So let's not get too excited. I'm happy that he's at Haas. And it's going to be interesting because Haas is becoming a little bit more competitive. You just got to be able to squeeze that performance again out. So, no, it's going to be interesting. 2025 will be exciting, even though still the same package.
Round 3 was Australia, mate. And members of F1 Weekly Familia did put out an extra shrimp on the Barbie for me. A big shout out and thanks to Miss Katrina, Dave, and the original JB. We inducted a new member into the Familia at Albert Park. Ranjan, he is originally from Bangladesh and is now based in San Diego. The whole platoon is now planning to turn Japanese and attend the Grand Prix at Suzuka next April. But back to the 2024 Australian Grand Prix. A very rare DNF for Max, which led to a Ferrari 1-2 led by the recovering Carlito. Very impressive. Lando was third for McLaren, and local lad Piastri, who is from Melbourne, delighted the crowd by his fourth place finish. Let's listen to the race winner, who was on the Will Ferrell program.
Very, very happy because it's not been an easy year for me, you know. You start in January suddenly with the news of the non-renewal, and this gives you a hit morally, and you think, okay, what next? Then I go training, and I say, okay, I'm going to anyway get ready for the season, push flat out, do my winter testing, do my winter preparation, arrive to the first race, and bang, a good podium. And then I go, okay, this is my season, and I keep putting myself out there, and then suddenly the appendix. And this, you say, okay, how out of shape I'm going to be the next race, when am I going to be able to be back, 10 days in bed, and then suddenly you come back and win.
Round 4 was in the land of the rising sun, and chip on the shoulder, Yuki Tsunoda. Our chip is very global and travels all over. The Red Bull stampede led to a 1-2. To borrow a phrase from Pedro de la Rosa, Checo unleashed his talent and finished only 12 seconds behind his teammate Max. This was Max's third win in a row at Suzuka. The two Red Bulls were followed by two red Ferraris of Carlito and Charles. In sixth place was Johnny Mercer of Motorsports. His most famous compositions include global hits like Karma, Bye Bye, and his number one hit of the 2015 season on the Pacific Ocean Billboard, GP2 Engine, Ah! Local Samurai Tsunoda was 10th. Now we come to the next race, the Chinese Grand Prix. This was chop chop from the schedule for a few years due to COVID-19. It was back on the calendar this year as round 5 in the usual place, Shanghai. Hang Em High was the modus operandi of Max, winning the race where Red Bull's first wunderkind, Bastian, gave the team their first ever Grand Prix win in 2009. This year, Lando Norris was second, with Checo third. But wait, the best is yet to come. The fastest lap and one extra point was earned by El Machismo in an Aston Martin, the Spanish James Bond with the license to thrill and kill his own career. In the 20th century, we had Miami Vice. In the 21st century, we have Miami Grand Prix, which is very nice and very hot. Finally, a race in a real destination city. This ain't no disco, this ain't no Baku, and this ain't no CBGB. And it was a driver from GB who took his maiden win in Miami Gardens. Lando Norris in his McLaren. Max was second and Leclerc third. Lando's teammate Oscar Piastri was 13th and recorded the fastest lap. The state of Florida was the first state to hold a U.S. Grand Prix back in 1959 at Sebring, and one of four states in the Union Gap to host an F1 Grand Prix at more than one location. Others are Riverside and Long Beach, both in SoCal, Texas, having races in beautiful Dallas and Austin, and Vegas, baby, the strip and the parking lot of Caesar's Palace. Round 7 was at Imola, the Enzo Edino Ferrari Autodromo, no longer called the San Marino Grand Prix, a name that forever will mean one thing, 1994. Now the race is known as Emilia-Romagna Maiden Italy Grand Prix. Beautiful track, I must say. Lando fought the good fight but had to settle for second behind the Max Factor. Ferrari, made in Maranello about an hour from the track, was third with Leclerc at the wheel. Mercedes star GR was seventh and set the fastest lap. Round 8 was the crown jewel of the glamorous world of Grand Prix racing, Monaco Grand Prix. The grid used to be graced by the likes of Fangio and Moss, but times have changed. Now we are treated to high-class acts like Machine Gun Kelly and Megan Thee Stallion. After starting from pole position few times, at last, local driver Charles Leclerc became the first Monegas to win his home Formula One Grand Prix. Piastri was second and Carlito third. Mercedes star of days gone by, but soon to come again, was seventh and set the fastest lap. LCH, that's what I'm talking about. Long, long ago, good news on the doorstep in Monaco. The first local driver to win in the streets of Monte Carlo was Louis Chiron in 1931, driving a beautiful French blue Bugatti Type 51. Round 9 was north of the border, up Canada way. Montreal is the place where Lewis, Kubica and Ricciardo took their maiden wins. But 2024 was MV all the way. Lando was second and we had a Mercedes driver on the podium for the first time this season. George Russell was third ahead of his teammate LCH. And car number 44 set the fastest lap. Now we come to round 10. Once upon a time, Lewis Carl Hamilton had 5 or 6 wins and 7 or 8 podiums by the time we came to round 10 of the Grand Prix season. But those days are long forgotten thanks to Verstappen. It was in Spain, round 10 of the 2024 Grand Prix season, that LCH made his first podium appearance of the season. He was third behind fellow Brit Lando. The McLaren driver also set the fastest lap. The winner was Dutch Master. This was his third successive victory in Barcelona. And it was here back in 2016, Max, as a teenager in love with Formula One, took his maiden win in Montmelo. You know, I like to correct myself. Max is not a teenager in love with Formula One. Max is a teenager in love with winning. Round 11 was at the Red Bull Ring. Max started the 71-lap race from pole position. For most of the laps, he had the race in the pen. Then Red Bull ran out of steam. Lap 52, Max had a slow stop and Norris was only 3 seconds behind Max. A little off for Max brought Norris a little closer. Lap 55, Lando was within striking distance and Max started complaining of no grip. It was getting harum scarum and was pretty obvious one of them or both may need a box of Kleenex by the end of the race. The battle for the lead was getting intense on the track and team radio. On lap 54, they were looking like Liverpool lads. Come together right now. The door opened for a chap from another English town, King's Lynn, to take the lead, and George Russell did not need a second invitation. This was first Formula One victory for Mercedes since Brazil 2022, when GR took his maiden win. Piastri made a machismo move on the outside of Carlito to get into second. Lando retired, but Max was able to soldier on to finish fifth. Fastest lap was set by car number 14, Mr. Machismo. Round 12 on lap 18 of 52 in this race. It was looking like yesterday once more, a Mercedes 1-2 in the British Grand Prix, with LCH ahead of GR. A golden moment for LCH at Silverstone. Win number 9 makes him the most successful driver at one circuit. Absolutely marvelous. I think Toto should give him a Mercedes sedan with Corinthian leather. Max was second and Lando third. Sainz was fifth and set the fastest lap. George Russell retired on lap 34. Here is the winner of 104 Grand Prix wins, talking to his ex-teammate, JB.
Yeah, I can't stop crying. I think, you know, it's been since 2021. I just, every day getting up, trying to fight, to train, to put my mind to the task and work as hard as I can with this amazing team. And this is my last race here, the British Grand Prix, with this team. So I wanted to win this so much for them, because I love them, I appreciate them so much, all the hard work they've been putting in all over these years. I'm forever grateful to everyone in this team, everyone at Mercedes and all of our partners, and then otherwise to all our incredible fans. I could see you lap by lap as I was coming round, and there's just no greater feeling as to finish at the front here.
Now we come to round 13. This was in Budapest, and it was a dingo day afternoon for Oscar Piastri. He was hungry for his first Grand Prix victory. His teammate Lando had taken over the lead thanks to an undercut, and after several, "Can you hear me now? Trust me, I'm trying to protect you," and similar messages from the team and rebuttals from the driver, Lando finally decided to be a team player as he was at Monza in 2021 and allowed Oscar to pass him and take victory. This is first Aussie win in F1 since Ricciardo at Monza in 2021 when Lando was told not to try to take the lead, which I think he could have, but it was good. Harmony prevailed then and also in Hungary. LCH was third, his teammate GR was eighth and set the fastest lap. Let's listen to Formula One's 115th different Grand Prix winner from Land Down Under.
Yeah, very, very happy, of course. I put myself in the right position at the start of the race. A little moment in the middle on the hard stint, but at the end we went on to different strategies trying to cover different people. Effectively it was an undercut. So I think for me it was fair to swap us back. You know, obviously my pace wasn't quite as good as I would have hoped, but I think an amazing day for the whole team. Obviously, a 1-2 for myself, of course, extremely happy. Still some things to improve and work on, definitely, but I feel like I did a lot of things right in that race, so incredibly happy to have my first win.
Now we come to round 14, final race before summer break. The Belgian Grand Prix at Spa became George Russell's Bobby Fuller moment. He fought the competition and won. When he fought the law, he lost, disqualified for not meeting minimum requirement of the car.
I want to be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart.
LCH was there to pick up the pieces and victory very gladly. What goes around comes around. Some of us remember LCH losing a victory thanks to a silly penalty in 2007 at the same track. Piastri was second, Leclerc third. Max was fourth, his teammate Checo was seventh, and with new motivation set the fastest lap. So here we are before this weekend's first race of the second half of the 2024 season. Let's take a look at the championship. Max still has a lead of over 3 wins, 277 points to Lando's 199. Leclerc is third with 177 points. Piastri is fourth on 167 points. Fifth is Carlos Sainz Jr. on 162, and LCH is sixth with 150 points. Seventh is Perez with 131 points. That is 146 points behind his teammate. Almost 6 race wins deficit to the Dutch master after 14 races. Russell is 8th on 116 points. Man with 9 F1 lives, Machismo is 9th in the championship with 49 points. Top 10 is completed by his teammate Lance Stroll with 24 points. 3 drivers from 3 different continents remain pointless. From Asia, we have Guan Yu Zhou. From Europe, we have Valtteri Bottas. And representing North America, we have Logan Sargeant. Here are the top 5 teams in the Constructors' Championship. Red Bull at the top with 408 points. McLaren is second on 366. Ferrari third with 345 points. Mercedes 4th, 266, and completing the top 5, we have Aston Martin with 73 points. Mr. Rogers, looking back on the first half, what impressed you, what depressed you, what you like, what you did not like, what say you?
Yes, yes, the whole season so far has been a little depressing. And on both counts, I mean, Fernando not on the podium this season when we had a plethora of Fernando last year when Aston Martin was finally making some progress. Now they've taken 6 steps backwards. No Fernando on the podium. And of course, his nemesis, I should say his partner in crime from your favorite year, 2007, is now winning Grand Prix. He doesn't even have to win. He still gets the win. So LCH has taken big steps forward. Mercedes has as well. They have found their milieu. And Aston Martin has forgotten what they were supposed to be doing in the first place. But if they do get Adrian Newey, that will be a coup. And we shall see what happens. But Max, this weekend is the big story. They need to bounce back. Gracias.
Sir, before we go into Motorsports Mondial and take a beverage break, let's have a little interview with Signor Nicola Larini. This conversation took place at Mugello last month, where his son was racing in Italian F4, and he was very helpful in doing a PDR and texting his papito to come to my window. So I would like to thank Davide Larini and Signor Nicola Larini for their time, and I hope listeners enjoy this brief conversation. Thank you.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Mugello with Mr. Nicola Larini. Sir, good to meet you. How are you today?
Personally, I'm fine. I'm not really happy about the race result about my son. Unfortunately, got penalty in the race, so we are going for the next one. And in 1 hour, I wish a better result for him and also for me, because I like to see good results. Yeah.
Yeah, I met your son earlier. He's a very nice kid. The question I have, how good is he compared to Papa at the same age?
It's not easy. It's so now he's 16 old. When I start my career, I was 18. So now it's completely different. There's no... It's difficult to...
Answer?
Yeah, it's difficult to, you know, to make a comparison because it's different. They start really young when they are 8 years older. So when I started my career, I started when I was 17 years old, so completely different.
Now, did you push him to go into racing or did he push you, Papa, I want to go racing?
Honestly,
yes.
I don't know.
Okay, no problem.
I don't know.
It just happened.
Yeah, he like at the minutes. The feeling is not like my one in the past. So the feeling I have in him is not the same. So I was angry at my time. So I don't know if he have the same now in Formula 4. I hope so.
Italy is global center of karting. Can you tell us a little bit about your karting career? How long were you in karting?
No. I started karting really late. I was 14 years old. So, for example, now they start 7 years old. So, at 12, they're already in the on the back many years of kart experience. The reason why at 15 years they are ready to drive a Formula 4 like this. This is a very competitive car.
And they are fast.
They are fast. They are faster than my Formula 3 in 80. I compare my lap time in 40 years ago. They are 5 seconds faster. So compare the Formula 3 of my time.
How important was the role of Signor Enzo Coloni in your racing career? You won the Italian Formula 3 championship with his team and also got into Formula 1 with Coloni.
Of course, my career, because when I joined him, I was really young. I've got the best car in the field that moment. With a good sponsor, good support, the target was to win, and I won. So from that Italian championship, Enzo was working on a Formula One project. I'm his first driver for that project. We tried to do Monza, but unfortunately the car was not ready, and then we went to Spain, and in Spain we have got a good race with a mechanical problem, but we were already in midfield. So after that, I got the opportunity to continue with other teams. But of course, Coloni has been my first big sponsor for my career. Yeah.
Now, when you got to Formula One, like you said, Spanish Grand Prix, what was the thing that surprised you most? And I want to ask you something. I was reading Zanardi's book, and he was saying when he got his first Formula One drive, in his book he wrote, he begged his father not to come to the race because parents get emotional. So how was your experience of first Formula One? And did you ask your dad not to come?
But my first experience has been... in Monza, fighting for qualifying. But honestly, I don't remember what's happening around, but I know that there was a big opportunity to become one of the top drivers in the world. So it has been an important moment for me and to achieve a goal. For the future.
Now, from Enzo Coloni's team, you went to Enzo Sella's team. When you are racing for a small team that does not have the budget of big teams, how does a driver keep his motivation high, knowing that you don't have the equipment to fight for points, paying position, like Alonso these days?
Of course. When you are in the past, you could have this opportunity to drive for a small team. This was the ticket to get in Formula One.
Big time.
Yeah. And now is impossible. So there are only 20 cars, only 20 drivers. In 1980, 89, we were 36 driver with 36 cars, so there was completely difference. So it was more opportunity for young driver to get in Formula One or to try. Of course, to score point was a bet. For example, with Osella, I've got this big opportunity in Canada when we were third after three-quarter race. Fortunately, we got electronic problem. But, you know, of course, that for me was like a business card to show to the other team that I was good. Unfortunately, Osella lost the opportunity to gain point and to gain access to the top 10 team. So,
you also raced for the Ligier team. How was the experience working with Guy? I understand he was quite a character.
Was not easy. The only point I can say has been nice is to for me to learn French, because I never studied French. So and in 1 year I was being able to speak French to everyone. Of course, apart this, was not easy. The team was not in the right condition to be faster, because the cars was coming from previous season and that, if I remember, also the season before, so was very old. You know, 8-cylinder engine Cosworth that was at the end of the life. Has been a very nice season for me, because I've been one of the driver that did the most mileage in the race. I did the 3x7. Unfortunately, the point were since the sixth position. So now it's different. Now you are 10 and you gain 1 point. But anyway, with Ligier has been a nice experience for me. Has been a big improvement, because I was really in a professional team, apart the kart competitiveness.
You still speak French?
Yeah, I can speak French, yeah.
Okay, that's good. In 1992, you replaced Ivan Capelli for the final two races of the season. As an Italian driver, it must be a source of great pride for you to drive for Ferrari. Can you tell us about these two races, and was there any chance of becoming a full-time driver for Scuderia in 1993?
Of course, I was the third driver at that moment. I was test and third driver. They replaced Gian because he was injured in Mugello. The first has been with Ivan Capelli in 1992. Mm-hmm. I replaced Ivan Capelli the last race of the season, because there was a new challenger with the active suspension, and I was developing this new suspension for 1993, and the team decided, because they were not competitive, so they decided to go in Australia and Japan with this car, to go straight in the race and to see how was the performance and if they were ready in this direction. So after the 1994, I replaced Alesi because he was injured in testing here in Mugello. That race has been for me difficult, because the car was good, not so bad. I've got a good opportunity also in Japan, but unfortunately I'm been involved in a first corner crash between Häkkinen and Senna. So I didn't race. I did only 50 meters. Race two was in Imola, and you know the story.
You know, that was going to be my next question. Difficult to ask, and maybe difficult for you to answer. Can you describe, you were on the podium at Imola. Can you describe the mood on the podium among the drivers and the atmosphere in the paddock after the race?
It was a nightmare. So it's the atmosphere was really bad. First of all, for the accident that we have got in the race weekend from Friday, Barrichello, then Ratzenberger, then And then during the race, after the start, my mechanics in the hospital for problem in the pit lane. And then Senna was, I think, a black week like this. I don't know. I don't remember. In the, also going into the past. It's, has been a very difficult race weekend, of course, for me. Also, if that has been my best race in Formula One, my best result. Okay, for this reason, I didn't have, of course, you know, nothing for the future because no one can remember my result, but only what's happened negative.
Yeah, I understand. Okay, I saw your DTM championship winning car at the Alfa Romeo Museum in Arese a few years ago. What are your best memories from that season? And that's a very competitive championship.
Yeah, after Formula One experience after Lamborghini experience, I decided to stop my career in Formula One because it was not possible to continue in a team without money. So, and the reason why I'm become a third driver for Ferrari, and at the same time back with Alfa Romeo as a full season in touring car. 1992, first of all, in the Italian Championship, and then in DTM for 3 years. Yeah, that has been an important moment of my career because finally I got the opportunity to drive a good car and to be the best on the field.
You know, I'm a big fan of Italian motor racing. The history is incredible. Nuvolari, Monza, Mille Miglia. Three of the first four championships were won by Italian drivers, Farina and Ascari, but no Italian world champion since 1953. Mm-hmm. What can be done to change that, and do you think that Kimi Antonelli will be the next Italian world champion?
Of course, after the years 1990 for the Italian driver, everything has changed because there was not any more important team. It was only Minardi that moment, but the other team were close, so there was not any more opportunity for the young Italian driver to get the pass to try to go in Formula One. And at the minute, after years without Italian in Formula One, the last one has been Giovinazzi, if I remember. Yeah, Giovinazzi.
Yeah, yeah. The Italian Jesus, they call him.
Yeah. And I hope that Antonelli can be the future for the Italian drivers in Formula One. I know that it is not easy, but he have a on the back, on his back, one of the biggest car manufacturers. So I think if he is good, he can stay in Formula One for many years and maybe to try to become a world champion.
You mentioned earlier that you started your racing life as a teenager. Question I have is this: you know, in those days, racing was always expensive, but now it's totally out of control. But now we have these program, driver development program, Red Bull and managers. For a young kid, is it easier to get into racing now or in your days?
I tell you, honestly, this world is completely changed. Now, if you want to be in the, for example, Formula 4 now, okay, it's an Italian championship, but if you read the driver's name, there are 37, 38 drivers. There are only 3 Italian drivers, including my son, and the rest come from worldwide. So this means that the Italian championship at the minute is one of the most important development young drivers for the future. And but to be in the top team to win is not easy because you need unlimited budget. So, and of course, you have to be right, you have to be faster, but it's not enough. You need money. Everything is changed when Stroll start racing in 2014, and something changed after his, because now it's not possible to be here just because you're only faster. You need the money, a lot.
Oh, yes. Now, Lewis Hamilton going to Scuderia Ferrari, did that surprise you? And do you think he'll win a championship with them?
I wish for him because last Sunday he showed the world that he's still good for fighting. But Ferrari, at the minute, from many years, they are not able to have a really consistent winning race car. So, okay, they can win some races, but they are not on top to be able to win a championship. So I wish for him all the best. I think for a driver like him, was a dream to finish a career in red, but never say never. So never say never, and we will see.
Okay. Now, you mentioned fighting. I'm sure you remember the fight between Villeneuve and Perron, Arnoux at Dijon-Prenois 79. And this day, drivers are constantly complaining, oh, he pushed me off the road, and there are penalties all the time. What do you make of that?
No, now is, as I told you, everything is changed. Now, if you push a little bit, penalty. If you go 2 centimeters off the line, penalty. So now they are going to replace tarmac with gravel again, as in the past, because that has been a very stupid idea to avoid this kind of problem. But of course, gravel, the stones are dangerous, but also in the past. So I think going back a little bit with old style is it's good for motor racing.
Final question: your favorite Formula One track?
Track, Spa.
Fantastic! Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All the best.
Bye bye. Thank you. Bye bye. Thanks.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the King, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
We shall start Motorsports Mondial by saying greetings and waiting is over, regards. And we first go to Austria for the MotoGP race from Red Bull Ring. Ducati riders take top 4 positions. Pecco Bagnaia was the winner, Jorge Martin was second, and third man on the podium was the beast, Enea Bastianini. Marc Marquez, the legend of not so long ago, was fourth. The first non-Ducati in top 5 was the KTM, which is an Austrian brand of South African rider Brad Binder. 7th win of the season has put Pecco in the championship lead with 275 points. Martin is second with 270 and Bastianini is third with 214 points. Next race is on September 1 in Aragon, Spain. Now we come back to the US of A and go to Madison, Illinois for IndyCar racing. And this Madison, Illinois is not far from St. Louis, hence the track is called Gateway. Spin and win was the MO of Joe, as in Joseph Newgarden. He is man from Tennessee, and his Penske teammate from New Zealand, Scott McLaughlin, was second. First oval podium for man from Sweden, Linus Lundqvist. Next, Louis. as in Louis Foster from UK. This season he has been more than okay, which was expected. He won the Indy Next race, also in at Gateway Track, leading from start to finish, taking 6 victories in the last 8 races. Safe to say, Foster has freezed the competition. This is no surprise to me, because few years ago, he took a jumbo, crossed the water, like the colonies, and won the USF Pro 2000 Series in his first attempt. We interviewed him last year, and he is based in L.A.
Hi, I'm Louis Foster, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
Now we move on to Porsche saying no mas to Formula One. They were hoping Red Bull will roll over to get the DAS hybrid engine, but were told you will be a partner and not managing partner. This would have been very good collaboration for both sides, and since both sides speak German, there would be no lost in translation issues, as there were some with Cyril Abitbol and Renault. But big companies have big egos in their top management, and Porsche walked away, hoping there will be 50 ways to find a new lover. There is no plenty of fish in the murky waters of Formula One's sea of love, which is very, very tainted, as we all know. Now Porsche has officially pulled the plug on their F1 dream. In days gone by, they won 3 straight championships with McLaren, Niki Lauda in 1984 and Alain Prost in 1985 and 86. And once upon a time, they even won a Grand Prix as a constructor. Time, 1962, place Rouen-Lézéard, driver Le Dengerny from California. Now we move on to our second interview of the day, and this is with very well-known and well-respected and a gentleman whose work I enjoy a lot, Mr. Alex Galinakis. We recently met and caught up on some motor racing issues, so please enjoy this conversation, and we shall return gladly.
Okay, folks, I'm here with Alex Galinakis. Alex, thank you for your time. How are you today?
You know, hot and sweaty in the Florida sunshine, but it's nice and air-conditioned in this.
How do you like the view looking at down on the football field and the paddock area?
It's very cool. It's on the Thursday on the Felch, wasn't it, a racetrack? It's really like, I mean, obviously I'm not. It's like, this race is, it's very much a, it's a very fancy car park race, which is fair enough. They've done an excellent job here. But it does feel strange not being in a racetrack setting, and then when you're looking out on an NFL stadium the whole time, so it takes you out of the usual experience, as it were. But no, yeah, it's all good. It's great being able to see everyone sort of going around the field on the day, as it were. And the only problem I suffer from is I struggle quite a lot with sort of pigment of my eyes lets in light, or it's very, very sensitive to light, I should say. So when the sun reflects off the top of the tent, I'm struggling, and I've got to have my sunglasses on indoors, which is a bit ridiculous.
The biggest PR for the first Miami Grand Prix was the fake marina, only in America. What is your assessment now of this race, as you said, in the Florida sunshine?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's obviously harder for it now Vegas has come along. That's obviously, you know, potentially taking a bit of the business away, because it's both are very high-end products. They're obviously helped by the fact that they're at different ends of the calendar, this one coming quite early on and Vegas coming right at the end. But yeah, I think there's a lot of sort of people scorn at this race quite a lot back in Europe, I would say. It's viewed sort of as a bit of almost out of touch with what normal people want to do if they wanted to come and see a race. What I would say to that is that motorsport has always been about very, very, very wealthy people racing very, very expensive machines. So to a certain extent, that's to be expected. Obviously, you don't ever want people to be exploited. But from what I understand, lots of people who come to this race very much enjoy it. I'll be honest with you, I don't go looking for people who are very unhappy with it. None have been brought to my attention. I wasn't here last year. I came in 22 and back in 24. But yeah, one of my colleagues was telling me, if you have a quick glance at Reddit, people who came seem broadly satisfied with the race. There is that picture doing the rounds on Twitter of the ridiculous, or the very, very expensive concessions, the food and everything. If people are happy to pay that, I guess they're happy to pay it, but most people that would seem rather extreme.
Logan Sargeant is a young American talent from Florida. Do you think he will survive the season? especially with Williams trying to get a super license for the Italian Kimi?
No, I don't think Logan Sargeant will be back in 2025. I also don't think he deserves to be back. I think he's unfortunately proven that he's not at the level required to make it in Formula One. It's a shame. He's a really nice guy. I was really impressed the first time I met him at the Williams factory. Would have been the start of the 2023 season. He just came across exceptionally confident. I appreciated that. He gave really good answers to the media. That's always a good thing for a driver to do. Not that they have to, of course. But yeah, I just don't think, unfortunately, he stacks up, and Williams showed what they're willing to do in Australia by putting Alex Albon in his car. I also don't think he brings enough in terms of commercial interest that could potentially trump the lack of points. That is obviously much less of an issue in this era of Formula One, with the team health being so much better because of the cost cap. So I think Williams, fundamentally, if and when we know there have been discussions between Mercedes and Williams about Andrea Kimi Antonelli ending up there, whether that's for this year, I think the talk's a little bit premature. There might have been a few crossed wires between Mercedes and Williams, but I do think, unless Mercedes chooses the real sort of nuclear option and goes, right, we want him in our works car for next year, which I think is perhaps looking a little bit less likely than it might have been at a certain point earlier in 2024, highly likely to see Antonelli at Williams next year, and with Albon under lock and key, that's it. That's all the seats sewn up, and there'll be no place for Sargeant.
Speaking of Antonelli, do you think he's the real deal, or in a few years will the media be referring to him as Gelato Man instead of Ice Man?
Well, that's a very good question. It's hard to know. I'll be honest, I haven't watched enough of his races to give a sort of any particular insight into his driving abilities or his particular skills or things that he's certainly very good at. But the key thing here is how highly Toto Wolff rates him. So their family's very, very close. Wolff knows exactly what Antonelli's capable of, or what he's been capable of so far. You never know with a driver until they make it at the top level. So, for example, let's go back and look at Logan Sargeant. It was just as likely that he would get to Formula 1 and do even better than many people expected as, say, take his teammate Alex Albon, you know, even more highly rated than Sargeant was. But, you know, things could have gone wrong, but he turned out very well. So, yeah, with Antonelli, an incredibly successful junior career, could get to the top level and not work out, a bit like Nyck de Vries happened with AlphaTauri last year. But no, the fact that the Wolff, Toto Wolff and his entourage and his people around him are very keen on Antonelli is a big indication of what's good about him. They know what they're talking about. James Vowles as well, the Williams boss, he was in charge of the area of Mercedes that included the junior program, so that he knows how good Antonelli is, especially at the lower levels. So they know what he's capable of. It's just whether, you know, when push comes to shove, he'll be able to make it. And the other element is that Wolff is still kicking himself from 10 years ago not signing Max Verstappen, or not being able to sign Max Verstappen. So he's keen not to miss out again when what he sees as a generational talent comes along. Whether that comes to be the case, we'll have to wait and see.
Mega moves happening in Formula One this season. Let's start with Lewis Hamilton. Two questions on this. Were you surprised he was saying Tata to Toto?
Yes, when the news initially broke that he was going, everybody was immensely shocked and really excited, actually, because, wow, Lewis Hamilton in a Ferrari is interesting to any Formula One observer, any Formula One fan. I think when you then understood the reasons why he made his decision, the fact that Toto Wolff was willing to do a deal, only have an option for Lewis's services in 2025, because he wanted, if Kimi Antonelli was ready, he wanted the option to put that in there. I think when you realise what Lewis understood in that, then you realise that it was more likely than not. I think there's a certain amount of almost disrespect, or a little bit of, oh, hang on a minute, I'm not getting the full sort of amount of love that I was getting previously. So that's why he did it. So I think, yeah, Wolff opened himself up to the risk, and the risk occurred.
Second question on this is, which is my favorite question these days, do you think Lewis will win championship number 8 in a red car before Alonso wins championship number 3 in a green car?
Judging by their place in the pecking order, yes. That said, they definitely, neither of them, I think, would be the favourites to win next year because of the pace of the Red Bull. So it all depends on what is particularly the best package in 2026 based on previous form. you wouldn't pick either of them as the favourite. Again, you'd look towards Red Bull with their aero prowess and Mercedes with their engine prowess. So, yeah, hard to say right now.
Adrian Newey departing Red Bull and will be able to work at another team next season, which is hard to believe. Your assessment on what happened here?
Yeah, it seems we're looking at a relationship between Adrian Newey and Christian Horner that's broken down considerably, maybe even longer than various people have been suggesting. It just shows you that nothing lasts forever, even in super teams where people are very well compensated for their services and willing to accept certain things. There's a limit for everyone, and obviously, as far as we understand it from what he said publicly, from what's being said behind the scenes, Newey reached his and that's it. He's decided to go, and in a way, you know, fair play to him. So yeah, he's making a decision that interests him, and hopefully his next move, whatever it is, even if it's retirement, you know, as long as he's happy, that's the main thing, isn't it?
Ron Dennis once said you cannot win championship with a customer engine program. Do you think Zak Brown with two very young talented drivers can prove him wrong?
That's a very good question. I think it depends how good the engine is. I can't remember the last time a customer team won a world championship. I guess it would have been Brawn in 2009.
Red Bull, right? Engine?
Yeah, it was considered a works operation though.
Yeah.
For several years, and then obviously Renault did come back while Red Bull was trying to get the Honda. No, Mercedes was good at that point. So yeah, the evidence suggests that Ron Dennis's words are right, but you know, if the right circumstances, there's always that potential.
The Formula One calendar is ever expanding. A global series should be global. But are you a fan of Formula One going to places where there is hardly any motorsports heritage or serious interest among the locals? And I've experienced this myself every time I go to Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. And I think some of the places don't even have an established national karting series, let alone a single-seater series. What's your take on this?
I mean, Formula One's history is it always goes to places that are willing to pay the most money. The worry you have is that if Liberty Media is choosing to prioritise money over places where fans are gathered or are existing anyway, and they might miss out, that would be a real shame. So, you know, we're talking about having Zandvoort and Spa alternating, that would be a bit of a shame, but the situation has to suit all parties. Yeah, does there need to be an existing motorsport scene for a race to occur? I don't think so. I don't think that's how progress happens. I'd just rather Formula One raced in places where human rights were a bit less of a, you know, well, just a bit better, and that, yeah, the yeah, I guess so, yeah.
HRT, Manor and Caterham were all gone from the grid within a few years. World Championship winning name and ready, access denied. Your expert opinion on this decision?
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame that we can't have a team and a name as legendary as Andretti into Formula One. I think Formula One probably benefit from that. I think there's a weird level of protection going on amongst the existing teams. Yeah, some of the explanations that Formula One has given in terms of why it's not allowing Andretti in doesn't really seem to stack up. What's, for example, Andretti not offering the Haas is, I think, would be something there. At the same time, you know, no one has a right to enter a Formula One team in anything. So there's sort of elements of, okay, just got to get on with it. But, you know, from a fan, from my point of view, if I want to see Formula One as healthy as it can be, a bigger grid, maybe with the teams making, I don't know, yeah, a bigger grid would be preferable, I think. But yeah, it's very tricky. It's a big shame that all the people that they've hired, Andretti, don't have a race project to work on. And it just does seem to be a bit self-defeating that Formula One wants to expand into America and yet is willing to almost insult one of America's biggest motorsport names and organisations. So yeah, it does seem a bit strange, but hopefully they can find a way. I would say if there's a cap at 10 teams forever, hopefully one of the teams or the brands that's really underperforming would sell up and Andretti's willing to meet the asking price and that everybody's jobs at those organisations will be preserved.
Finally, how about a little bit of information on Alex Kalinauskas, how you got interested in racing and about, you know, what you're doing these days?
I don't actually know how I got interested in racing. I just always remember being interested in it. My dad reckons he had Grandstand on the BBC back in the early 90s, and as a toddler I was just obsessed with it. My earliest memory is watching Damon Hill win the Japanese Grand Prix in 1996 and clinch the world title, so that was pretty cool. Just always loved it. I was always that kid at school who was obsessed with it, much mocked by my friends, but it was always a passion of mine. I like to think I'm quite good at sort of telling stories in an interesting way. That was a sort of skill I developed throughout my time at school and university, and then I always read Autosport magazine, so I kind of hoped maybe I could turn that into a job one day, and I was very lucky to. So yeah, don't know really what the future holds in terms of where my career goes from my job right now as Grand Prix editor, because it's my dream job. So yeah, it's nice to have achieved that, and whatever comes next, frankly, is a bonus.
I enjoy your work very much, and I've been reading Autosport since the early 70s. Thank you so much.
Okay, sir, now we come to some driver signing. Swiss driver Nico Müller has signed to race in Formula E next season with Michael Andretti's team. The Sona search for second driver at Sauber Audi continues after the sayonara from Sainz Jr. Safe bet would be to continue with Valtteri Bottas, a race-winning, low-maintenance driver. Since they already have Nico Hülkenberg, I see no need to sign Mick Schumacher and turn the team into a total Panzer division, or as the host will say, complete Fliegelflugel operation. There will be no Blitzkrieg unless they have the package, and I don't see that happening in their first year. Lately, there are reports that IndyCar star Alex Palou is also in the mix. Based on how IndyCar champions have stumbled and fall in F1, I don't see the need to leave a race-winning team to go on Dream the Impossible Dream Cruise. This can only turn into a shipwreck if you don't destroy your teammate. I would recommend a return ticket on JetBlue Mint. Finally, we come to question of the day. Will Alex Palou be Commander Cody or DB Cooper of Formula One? What say you?
I think the Alex Palou thing, as he said and his people say, that it's fake news. And, you know, it's sort of annoying for a driver, because obviously Palou's fantasy is to go in Formula One. Audi would be a great team. But when you know it's not real, it's sort of annoying. But I prefer him to go to Formula One. I need something new. I was happy when Alex Zanardi went to Formula One. Jacques Villeneuve went to Formula One. We need these leaps from over here to over there. So I'm hoping it's true, but apparently it's not true. And I wish Alex Palou the best.
Finally, we come to Musical Mondial. The race is coming in the Netherlands, so today we present a famous Dutch blast from the past. This was a huge international hit that left many shocking blue. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy. Bye-bye.